Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman Fairfax Toyota. Let's ride together.
Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees? Check. Loaner cars and free car washes? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman, Kia of Alexandria. Let's ride together.
Hey guys, what's up? This is Josh Norman.
This is Joe Gibbs.
You listen to Redskins Talk.
What up, everybody? Redskins Talk Podcast. JP Finley, Mitch Dischler. We got John Kime on the phone. We always appreciate Mr. Kime's time. Kime, how are you?
What up? I'm good. How are you?
Mitchell?
I like the Kimes bringing the what up.
Yeah. I like Kime's time. That should be a segment.
It should be a segment.
And now it's time for Kime's time, brought to you by Rich Tandler's Amazon Purchases. As always, we're brought to you by the good folks at Orsman Automotive of Virginia. We ride with them. You should do the same thing. This is your reminder to come join us all January 17th at William Jeffries Tavern in Arlington. We're going to have some fun. We're going to do 7 to 8 o'clock will be a hangout session. 8 to 8:30-ish will be a live Q&A pod. And then 8:30 to 9-ish, you get some off-the-record questions with no recording devices anywhere close to allowed. And after that, it's just kind of chaos. Whatever happens, happens.
And if we're lucky, we get a little Kime's time there.
There you go.
We got to set up the train from Berryville, but as long as we can get that working.
We're sending Pete out there to pick him up.
That's right.
My flight leaves at 6 o'clock that night.
All right. We are gathered here to discuss the events. Thursday's news. TMZ is all over this Reuben Foster story. TMZ reported that the charges in Florida against Reuben Foster were dropped. This was his second time this year being charged with domestic violence, both including the same woman. The first time in California, I'm not a lawyer here, and I hate having to pretend to be a lawyer. The first time the case was going forward, and then the woman recanted her testimony, and the case fell apart, and there was no whatever happens next didn't happen. So that case went away. Fast forward to November, when the same woman and Foster had an incident in Tampa in a Florida hotel room, and he was arrested. He spent the night in jail. The 49ers released him. The Redskins, amid a flood of controversy, claimed him off waivers, and Doug Williams had a statement. Doug Williams then made another statement and an apology because of comments he made on the radio. Jay Gruden spoke about it. All along, though, the message from the Redskins was pretty clear that if Foster isn't cleared of everything, he'll never play here. So fast forward to today. What the hell day is it? January 4th?
January 4th.
You sure? It might be the 3rd.
Today's the 3rd.
Mitch, you're always my guy, buddy.
January 3rd.
And I think the proceedings in Florida were supposed to move forward, and the charges were dropped because there are some reasons on the internet why. I don't know. We're not getting into the what, who or what. Charges are dropped. What does that mean for Reuben Foster? I very much think he will still get suspended by the NFL. There is precedent. If you look at what happened with Ezekiel Elliott, he was never even charged, and he still served a 6-game suspension. I am of the mind that Reuben Foster and the Redskins would be wise to not even appeal any suspension. Just take it, serve it, move on. That's what Jameis Winston did with his situation. I think he served a 3-game suspension to open the 2018 season. But here's what it really means, and here's what we need to talk about. I expect Reuben Foster to be on this team in 2019. And I think the reason the Redskins claimed him was so that they could have his contractual rights for 2019, 2020. And then if things work out, they have a fifth-year option on Foster for 2021 because he was a first-round pick. So I've talked a while here. Kime, you're up.
I don't know what to say.
Wait, that, to tee him up.
Right. I mean, I think, well, I wrote and said at the time that this sign claiming Reuben Foster off waivers was a terrible move optically. It looked awful, but it was all about getting the contract and having a long-term chance of keeping the player.
That's the reason that they signed him right away. It's the reason
that's why they claimed him.
Yeah.
And that's what they would say publicly, privately, that if he was found, if the charges stuck, then he wouldn't play for them. So, you know, here we are. And I'm like you, JP, I would expect him to be on the roster next year. If they claimed him at a time where it was at his lowest, I would think that after this, it just kind of solidifies in their mind what they did. So, you know, it's really hard to comment on this whole case, though, because there's so many layers and so many things that I'm just not qualified to get into.
Totally.
But
domestic violence is so complex, and the reasons why things occur, I don't even pretend to know about. I just know the football perspective.
And I know from football, and I know that the league is looking into it still. I was told by a spokesman that they're reviewing the matter, which you would expect. And you brought up the Ezekiel Elliott precedents. Elliott was not charged with anything and still received the 6 games. So, you know, so that's where we're at now.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I would say is about what JP led us into is to accept whatever suspension they give. I think you got to play it by ear and see what that suspension looks like. I mean, if it's a 3-6 gamer or whatever, sure, go for it. But if they're going to give him half the season or 10 games or something like that because it's a quote-unquote second offense because he had the drug charges coming out of college and the weapons offense or whatever it may have been, I think you got to take a pause there. But we all said it when the signing happened, like domestic, that it wasn't a good signing for the Redskins PR-wise. It wasn't a good signing, you know, morality-wise, but getting that contract is what was important. And what was important to them. And moving forward, depending on what that suspension looks like, you have a significant talent upgrade in the middle of your defense right now.
So that's what I want to talk about. And that's what I think the three of us are qualified to talk about, frankly.
Yeah.
You know, we can tell you what has happened legally, and that's all we've got for you. Because the circumstances surrounding this thing are quite complicated. But I want to talk about what we think is going to happen in the middle of that Redskins defense. So before we do, I want to thank the good folks, Orsman Automotive of Virginia. Go buy a Toyota at Orsman Chantilly Toyota. All right, here's what we know is that Zach Brown got benched late this season, and Zach Brown at one point told a handful of us in the Redskins locker room that he saw the writing on the wall and expected to be released to another team next season. Now, at locker cleanout, ZB kind of walked some of that back. I don't know that they're going to cut Zach Brown. I think saying you know they're going to do it is a little premature. But I think he was right when he said he saw the writing on the wall. Sean Dion Hamilton emerged as the starter for this team.
And played pretty well.
And here's the thing. Zach Brown has nearly a $9 million cap number for 2019. None of it is guaranteed. So if they were to make a change there, I wouldn't be shocked. Kime, let's start with what you think happens with Zach Brown.
Yeah, I mean, nothing is for certain at this point, sure. But I'd be surprised if he's on the roster given that cap hit and given the fact that they need to create some cap room for other positions and for other needs. And my MO is always like, if you cut somebody, you create a hole. So how are you filling that hole? Well, if you have people on the roster that you feel can fill that void, then you're going to make that move. And, you know, my understanding is that, well, first of all, you know, Zach Brown kept missing some practices with illnesses and whatever other things, whatever else was going on.
I think that clearly started driving the coaches nuts.
Well, yeah. And listen, I think that they were probably being driven nuts long before that. But what it also did is it allowed them to get more of a look at Sean Dion Hamilton and where he was at in the defense. And that, you know, so some of it, a lot of it was on Brown's own situation, and then a lot of it was on how Sean Deion Hamilton, in their eyes, progressed. Now, Sean, you know, he is a smaller linebacker. I mean,
dude, he's smaller than me.
Yeah,
but much faster.
Yeah, and he's got, but he has good instincts. He's smart. And he has good instincts. So I think they started to see that. So you know, and I would also say that he can probably play either linebacker spot. So if let's say Reuben Foster is in the middle there, he is a guy who would take a spot occupied by Zach Brown. Reuben Foster is, from the football standpoint, is not a play caller on the field.
Right.
That would be either Sean Deion Hamilton or Mason Foster. But now you have options, and so that's why I think it would be surprising to me to see them stick with Zach Brown.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Let's not forget that Zach also said that he was playing through a torn oblique or whatever for 10 weeks of the season. That definitely, I could imagine missing some practices for that sort of injury. But as you look forward.
But that was never the given reason, though.
Right, I know. I'm just.
That's kind of heat. What he said.
What he said. And no one's confirmed that from the Redskins either. But looking forward, you know, if you have to start the season with Sean Deion Hamilton and Mason Foster as your two middle linebackers and wait till Reuben Foster comes off of whatever suspension he may be facing, you still have Josh Harvey Clemens on your rookie deal in the back there and Zach Vigil, who costs next to nothing. So you have some depth in the.
I don't think Vigil's under contract next year.
Is he a free agent? I thought he had.
Harvey Clemens. I mean, whatever. We're
either way, yeah, we're getting to the bottom of the roster. But you have a little bit of depth there to help get you through the 6-ish weeks or whatever that you may not have a Reuben Foster. So I agree. I'd be surprised to see Zach Brown back next year.
Well, and I mean, here's the other thing: Zach Brown's gonna be 30 years old. He's gonna be a 30-year-old linebacker making $9 million. The odds kind of start to go against you just when you look at it that way. Sean Deion Hamilton and Reuben Foster started together for a really good Alabama defense. You know, I think there is a lot to consider. I just think this thing appears to be kind of happening in front of our eyes. And I don't know what it means for Mason Foster. He carries a much lighter cap number next year.
He's around 2.25.
Right. And we all know about Mason's situation where his comments from Instagram got leaked publicly, but coaches love Mason Foster. Teammates love Mason Foster. You know what I mean? That's a different situation.
Right.
Now, he doesn't have Zach Brown's speed, and I think it's important to point out.
And they know that.
Right. Just so Pro Football Reference, Zach Brown was the number one overall rated defender the Redskins
had. Pro Football Focus or Reference?
I'm sorry, Pro Football Focus. Forgive me. He was a plus 20.4, significantly higher. The second rated guy was Preston Smith at plus 13.5. John Allen was plus 11.9.
I think that also speaks to the flaws in ranking player, rating players.
Sure, absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah, and so that's Preston,
So just listen. So they go Brown, Preston, John Allen, DJ Swearinger, Ryan Anderson, Ryan Kerrigan. So you got Ryan Anderson ahead of Ryan Kerrigan, which I think speaks loudly.
And no Daron Payne on that list. I feel like he's pretty high up there too.
He's not. He's after Pernell McPhee. You know, Kime, I got one for you. This is good. You're gonna jump off a building, dude. Do you want to know who the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 who the ninth highest rated defender on the Redskins defense was for 2018, John?
Greg Stroman. Am I right?
Yes, dude. You're right. I thought that might get a reaction from
I thought you were going to throw a ha-ha.
And that's, you know, the hard part with always the rankings is, I mean, it's just a hard thing to do. And you talk, yeah, I will say this, players like it when they're highly rated and they say they're very flawed when they're not. But I've even had players say, like, you know, yeah, whatever. It's, they have their own stuff that's really good. And I think the rankings, it's hard. The ratings, it's hard.
I totally agree.
And, you know,
the lowest rated for the Skins was Mason Foster at minus 11.3.
Yeah. And you know, I think, like, going back to Mason, they know that he's really a two down linebacker. And they know that he's not as athletic as some of the other guys and as fast as some of the other guys. And I think one thing They clearly have a need to upgrade at that position and both spots if they wanted to and if they can afford to, because you're going to have other areas that you need to upgrade. And it's just a matter of where you're going to invest. But I do think that you all saw there are some issues there, whether it's in coverage, whether it's, sometimes either getting off blocks a little bit better, hitting wrong gaps, that kind of stuff. But I think they're aware that they need to upgrade there. And it's just, again, you can't upgrade everywhere in one off season. And that's where I think, again, you go to a Reuben Foster or SDA. I'm going to just call him SDH. Improvement, however they view him down the road. It's funny because before last season, I was talking to people there. It's like they kind of viewed him as a slash backup a valuable backup, but a strong special teamer, valuable backup. I don't know that he's progressed beyond that in their eyes, or that he just felt like he was a better option for them than Zach Brown at this point. I think they have some options there, which is good for them, because in some other spots, they don't have the same kind of options already on the roster.
Yeah. And I think it's also important to point out that the coaching staff, the Redskins coaching staff during pre-draft stuff, Reuben Foster coming out in 2017, loved the guy.
Loved him.
So that's important to point out in this process. Foster is, at Alabama, was a tackling machine, capable of big plays, good lateral speed, can get sideline to sideline, a really good football player. And
my understanding is that even at, before that draft, is that Allen was the higher rated guy on their board, but there were definitely some in that room who were pushing for Foster at that pick.
Right. And take what you believe draft time, grain of salt, but there was talk that the Niners, who did they draft? Solomon Thomas at that?
Solomon Thomas.
But that they wanted Foster there, and they just thought they might be able to get him later. Like, he was their guy there when they traded back.
Yeah.
They traded back from Trubisky, right? Like, the Bears traded up to get Trubisky.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm looking just at Foster's Pro Football Focus page. His rookie year, he played 10 games. He was a plus 18 and a half for the Niners. In 10 games, I think he made 70 tackles. He was an impact player as a rookie. His second season, I believe he was dealing with a shoulder injury. He also started the year suspended, then got arrested, got put on the commissioner's exempt list. I think he only played 6 games. That sound right, Kyle? I can pull
6
it up.
Games.
Yeah, something like 6. That, yeah.
6 games, 30 tackles. So I feel like, I don't know, but it seemed like his life was kind of a mess in 2018, and maybe new start. I don't want to be.
I think it's hard to know what he's going to need or what he can do with that.
And I don't want to be. I'm not presenting this as some sort of helicopter rescuing him. And I'm also not presenting this as something that we should be overly dismissive of. But he's going to be playing with 5 or 6 guys he played with in college. He lined up next to Sean Dion Hamilton for a lot of his career. John Allen, Deron Payne. I think the skins.
Ryan Anderson. I think Ryan Anderson is a good friend of his. So.
Yeah, and you remember what those guys,
But
just as a football player, you heard what those guys said about him in the locker room after they got him. They're excited about the football player.
Yeah, and all that stuff. Well, he's going to be what he is, and and I think that's a hard thing for us to really know. How anybody is in there, and to really kind of guess where it might go.
Totally.
And I'll shift it back to football, because what I know is, like, when you watch the Cowboys, for example, and what those two guys in the middle do for them, and when Sean Lee was healthy, the difference he made in their defense, with Van Der Esch and Jalen Smith, the difference they make in that defense. And I don't know that, Reuben Foster is going to be that guy for them. I don't know. Because obviously everything always takes more than talent. Guys have to be available, et cetera, et cetera. But I think when you look at that defense, you see the difference that level of talent can make on a defense, and especially playing behind this group they have up front, whether it's Reuben Foster, or someone else they get in the draft. then, you know, that it has a chance to really to transform a defense if you get the right guy there.
Well, you talk about, like, in baseball, you need that up the middle defense. You need pitcher, catcher, center fielder to you know, to be solid. And the Redskins are two-thirds of the way there with the John Allen, Daron Payne in the middle. Then you have, if Reuben Foster can work out, you have a solid middle linebacker there, and you just got to get some help on the back end.
I agree. I think, kind of, talking about those Cowboys linebackers, the two young guys,
Leighton Vandresh
and Jalen Smith, right? Yeah. The speed those guys have is just, and that's what the Skins haven't had. Zach Brown has it, but it
doesn't translate to coverage.
Not even coverage. It also, this season, and maybe it was the oblique, maybe it was if he was freelancing, whatever it might have been. Last season, we saw him get to the edges to make stops in the run game. You saw a lot less of that this year, I thought. I think that speed could really help them on the defensive side of the ball. Kaim, I got two questions for you, because one of the people that told me this, you were standing next to me. So I know you at least heard this from one defensive player and probably others, because I heard it from others. What do you think the chances are they switch from the 3-4 to the 4-3 for their base? I recognize they play nickel most of the time, but you and I were standing there when one dude told us that they have to.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, because in the past, I have not been a huge proponent of thinking that that's the end-all, be-all to making that kind of move. Like, in fact, you know, in the past, I felt like, well, I felt it was more a talent procurement issue or maybe coaching than it was scheme, because there have been teams that win with the same scheme. Why is that? It's not, you know what I mean? That, and they're in that 4-3 a lot. You know, as far as a nickel front, it's not a true 4-3, but it is that hybrid. Yep. So it's not like they're always in a 3-4 with three down linemen and, you know, four linemen. You know, it's not, it's like 20 to 25% of the time that's what they're in. And so, but this is the first time where, for me, I look at it and say, and I, you know, I do believe that there will be a debate about that there this off season. That I, you know, it wouldn't shock me if they, I shouldn't say that. I do think that this is the first time I look at it and say, you know, you could do it this off season if you wanted to. And I don't think it would be a bad move. And I think the reason why I say that is that it depends on how, like, you, how they would view a Ryan Kerrigan. Do you view him as a right defensive end in a 4-3? If you do, then you can put him there. You got your three linemen. You can put, you know, whether it's Ionite or someone on the left end. You cannot, you don't want two smaller D linemen, I don't think, playing, or you wouldn't want, like, Ryan Kerrigan and Preston Smith both playing defensive end in that situation. Right. Now you're just playing your nickel.
But Ryan Anderson might be able to help you there.
Well, I think to me, and this is what I would wonder. So this would be my, if we look at it this way, when I look at it, like, you could put Ryan Anderson, could he be a strong side linebacker? He's not a defensive end. He's too small. You don't want, then you're playing with a small defensive line in that case. Again, it's your nickel defense in essence. So could you put him as a strong side linebacker? Does Reuben Foster or Sean Deion Hamilton or one of those guys have the speed? You know, could they be a weak side linebacker in a 4-3? That oftentimes is your playmaking guy. So, and then who would be the middle? You know, would Hamilton, could he be that guy in the middle? Or is he too small for that in the 4-3? But can you free up those guys up front? You have a good front and you have some depth on that front. So I do think that, like, this is the first time where I feel like that debate is more real in my mind, and worth having in my mind than in the past, because it does seem like you do have the talent that could go that way. Plus, what it would do is it means that you don't have to go out and get a bunch of other guys. If you lose Preston Smith, how are you going to replace him? You know, you want a guy who can rush the passer. Well, I think, like, I like Ryan Anderson, what he adds, and I see what they saw in him, which is a mindset and demeanor. He's physical. He's tough. He's not a dynamic pass rusher, but in a 4-3 as a strong side guy, would he be better off? That's like, and I'm not saying he is or not. I just think that's something that I would be wondering more about. And then you don't have to spend on a Preston Smith to keep him around if you don't feel like you can afford him, and then you can invest that money somewhere else. So that, you know, I mean, so whether or not that's real, I don't know, but it feels like there's more of a, I think it should be more of a debate or discussion this offseason than in the past.
Well, not necessarily to the 4-3 point, but you brought up the money and Preston Smith, and we talked about it yesterday on the pod, GP, about this team doesn't have a lot of money, obviously, with all the money, with everything that's tied up in Alex Smith and whatnot. And they need to maximize every penny, and getting this, getting a player that has this potential at, what is it, 1.3 this year or something like that?
Foster, yeah, 1.3.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he was the 30th pick in the – so I think the biggest key is that you get that fifth-year option. And who the heck knows what's going to happen between now.
Right. But I'm just saying, for a team that needs to maximize every penny and get more production than value, than what they pay for the for a player – This is potentially a big step forward for what the defense could be.
Sure, there are so many ifs to hurdle before it becomes a reality. But you never know; it could pan out. Kime, I know we all got to run here. I wanted to ask you one last thing. I don't know if you saw my tweet last night. I did and I recognize that it is silly early to talk about depth charts for 2019. But you also. I'm honoring the late Rich Tandler by doing
it. Yeah, I was the first guy I thought. I was like, Rich already had his 53-man roster ready.
My 54-man.
JP 54-man. Yeah.
but I wanted to – it actually started because Mitch on the podcast the other day was bringing up really the amount of question marks on the Skins offense. So I kind of went through the position groups, and a lot of it is
– Oh, the receivers.
Dude, have you looked at who – I just got to read this. I'm going to read the top – five, and maybe we'll go. I'm just going to read them all. Josh Doctson, Paul Richardson, Robert Davis, J.U. Chesson, Trey Quinn, Cam Sims, Darvin Kidzie.
Cam Sims?
Yeah. I mean, you've got two guys with NFL experience, and one of those guys played. What did Richardson play? Five games last year?
Yeah, whatever.
Doctson's never gone for 90 in 3 years in the NFL.
Yeah.
Trey Quinn has more IR stints than touchdowns in a rookie season. I think Trey Quinn, but.
Yeah. And I'm curious to see where Cam Sims goes, too. But, I mean, it speaks to the need that they have. And it's. I know they're going to try and re-sign Jamison Crowder. It just depends, again, where does the money go?
Sure.
When you watch him, like, I'm watching him come off the line the last few weeks, and the way he has an ability to create separation because of his cuts. He's not a burner type, but he can win a little bit quicker than others. And, you know, you saw that. He was good at creating some separation for himself. And I think Trey Quinn does that, too, in a different way.
Trey Quinn's oddly physical. For a small guy. Trey or
Jamison being able to play on the outside, though?
No.
I don't see Jamison as the guy that you want out there. I still think that, to me, you've got to get another guy who can win quickly at the line. I mean, listen, they need an Amari Cooper type.
The overall team speed has to go up immensely this offseason.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to do in a single offseason, but that offensive team speed needs to be improved.
Yeah, and I think so. Whether it's somebody who can get you something after the catch, and that's hadn't always been Cooper's game. It certainly has been in Dallas, and I love what he's added there. But I think they need somebody who can win quickly and be a threat at any point, not just running down the field. And I felt like Paul Richards. I still feel Paul Richardson can help them. Because he does have speed, and we didn't see a healthy Paul Richardson all year because he hurt that shoulder in training camp. And I think there's some people close to him who would have, felt like he could have justified shutting it down before the season started.
He's reckless out there.
Well, and
you see him diving full out. I mean,
the thing that got told to me, John, and I'm guessing you heard something similar, is they kind of wanted to shut him down, and he was like, no, I can push through this.
He kept trying to push through it. Yeah.
But eventually, the exact phrase was, look, Paul Richardson, when he's not 4-5, 4-4, Paul Richardson isn't helping you. You know what I mean? Like, when his elite speed isn't there, and I know people are like, it's his shoulder, not his leg. when you're playing with a separated shoulder and then he had the banged up knee on top of it, all that stuff starts to add up.
And let me say, now, because he did have the knee issue as well. I think that was a major factor. But, you know, the shoulder can bother you at all times, and it could impact how fast you run.
Especially if you're getting bumped off the line of scrimmage.
Right. So it's not just about straight line speed. I mean, a lot of guys have straight line speed who don't win down the field. So, I think you're right. And that's a good point. If he doesn't have that, he's not going to help you. And he did fight through it for a long time. And I think it just got to a point for him. It was like, this is, you know, he was being used a little bit less or was less a part of the overall game plan. It's like, at this point, it's like, well, what am I doing? So, it makes sense to shut down at that point. But, you know, if he's healthy, he does give you another guy with speed. And to me, it's more for him. I always viewed him as a guy who can do more than just run. Like Deshaun was a definite guy who's going to run down the field and beat you. That's what he did. With Richardson, I viewed it more as a, you know, deep crosser types, you know, running away from you across the field versus running away from you down the field.
Because he could even do that in the red zone. Remember they had success on that when he was just running that long drag and just creating that little bit of the separation?
Yep. And that's how I envisioned him. So you get that, plus you get another guy with some speed, wherever it is. And, you know, listen, Jay Gruden knows that they need playmakers on offense. And I don't think you can rely on some of the guys you've relied on in the past because, it's, you know, whether injuries or whatever. I mean, I think a healthy Chris Thompson, big deal for them. A healthy, you know, if Jordan Reed gets his offseason, gets to be a strength and train again for the first time in a couple of years, that's a big deal for them. But I would still not rely on that. I'm going to look for another playmaker on the outside. And because they don't have one. I mean, they have to get that.
Well, I wanted to circle. I mean, I don't want to get bogged down in it, but I did want to circle back. You think they're going to try and offer Jameson? You think, JP? You don't think that's a little bit redundant with him and Trey? In an offense that needs so much, you don't think that's a little redundant?
I think offering and paying market rate will be different. I think the team would like to have Preston and Jameson back. I just don't know that they're going to pay to get them.
I definitely agree with that. I think they definitely would. And if I had to rank them, I'd put Jameson up top. But I don't know that that's my, in terms of what I feel like they would want to do. I don't even know if I would say that. Because I think they're such different value with, you know, Preston being a young pass rusher who's still just entering his prime. And it's as much, too, you have to look at how do you replace this guy? You know, fans can say, oh, just let him go. But then what do you do? What's the alternative here? And I'm not saying that there isn't one.
Right.
But what is it?
It's a similar conversation with cutting Josh Norman. Oh, cut him. He costs too much. What's your plan after that?
Yeah, you still have to find the guy who can start. Because in their, look at it through their eyes too. Quentin Dunbar is coming off an injury there with his nerve damage. Now it seems like things are progressing well, but they seem to be progressing well at times during the season too. And he can never shake it. So where's he going to be with this? And then for how long? So I think there's just, you know, you can't just unilaterally cut everybody or not pay everybody. And I just think there's a limit to what you have to pay those guys, obviously, or what you should. But yeah, Jameson, I know that I know they'd like him back. It's just at what's the cost? I mean, you know.
Well, and Kyle, I would add this: there were guys last year, and I think Bashaud Breeland kind of is the headliner on this, that we knew they weren't going to bring back. They were not going to make an offer. It was good luck. See you down the road.
Right.
Like I don't think any of the pending free agents now. Outside of some of the guys that were signed mid-season and stuff. But I think it's an entirely – even Spencer Long, to some degree, wasn't offered. Trent Murphy, like these guys that you thought they would at least try to keep around or at least be somewhat interested in, these guys were let go and without much fanfare about it from the front office. I think with Jameson and with Preston, it's a different situation.
I definitely agree with that. There were a handful of guys like, I know they're not going to, you know, Trent Murphy was one where I thought, oh, they're going to try and keep him. But then when you saw the money, guys, like, you can't keep him at that price.
And Preston's going to get more than that for sure.
Well, that's what I just say. That's the contract that you look and say, where is this going to go for him? And, you know, I know like we can look at the sack totals. That's fine. But you still see a guy who, clearly has some ability, and people are going to feel like he hasn't tapped into all of that yet. Whether or not that's fool's gold, we'll find out. But that's how it's going to be viewed. And he's, you know, he's been a durable guy. And so, you know, I think he will get paid. It's just, again, where at what point are they uncomfortable paying him? Yeah. And the same thing for Jameson. I mean, Jameson is still a guy that they really like. And I know Trey Quinn's here, but I do believe if they could keep Jameson, they will.
We can go on this. Did you have something to say, Mitch?
No. I mean, in the past 4 years, they haven't kept the backup for the slot receiver for Jameson until this season when they drafted Trey. And to me, that just felt like the natural progression of, we know Jameson's going and Trey's going to slide right back in there.
That's why I say if the money gets to a certain point, then yeah. But I don't think that they would just let him go now, especially because what have we learned about Trey Quinn that you can say he's just going to step in next year and do what?
Right. If he can stay on the field, he's a talented player. But I think can he stay on the field is a question.
But I don't know, listen, I always say, what do we see? Well, they see a lot more. They know what guys can do. But I do know that there's still a lot of love for Jameson there. It's the money. I mean, and I think, you know, again, that's, I go back to the thing is that what is your alternative? So if you say, well, we want to pay this guy over here because he's a bigger playmaker, and we can get a buy and we can go with Trey Quinn here. Okay. That's fine. You know, so I can see that too, but Jameson's, I do know that there's definitely support for him.
Jameson's obviously a good player. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that they need to dismiss him because
I heard Mitch hates Jameson Crowder.
No, I know exactly what I heard.
Jameson Crowder went to Duke. Yeah. I'm on board.
Hashtag hater.
Hater.
But I know, Mitch. Your reasoning is very sound, and I know that there's still people there who like him a lot, and it's just a matter of, you know. But I heard the same thing about some guys last year too. It's like, yeah, we want to keep him, and then it's like the money gets to a certain point, and you just say, well, do we? Right. You know, what else do we need? And you know, is it better to pay, just have Trey Quinn there? And pay this guy over here. And that's all. That's going to be the big point of discussion.
And with the current power structure in place at Redskins Park, they've been fairly frugal. And I think that's a good thing to keep in mind as we march closer to this. All right, two things.
Good point.
Quickly to both of you, let's remove quarterback because that situation is so screwed up. They don't have money to go after anything. They'll have to draft someone. Let's remove quarterback. Is wide receiver now the biggest position of need? Is it still O-line? Is it corner? Is it safety maybe? Wide receiver is an important spot, and they've tried for a long time without dynamic players. Maybe it's time to get aggressive. Mitch, what's your biggest position of need removing quarterback?
They've drafted a lot of wide receivers over the past four
it's crazy to,
or so years.
Missing on Doxson. And I still contend he's not a bust, but he hasn't delivered first round value.
But I think your number one spot of need is at safety.
I thought you would say O-line for sure, knowing your history of big men loving.
Listen, outside of left guard, they have a solid O-line, and I think that they'll address that. I think that's a free agency.
Your call sign is Big Man Lover 99 or whatever.
I believe left guard is an address in free agency, not in the draft right away. Or if it is in the draft, it's later rounds. But you need that. You need a ball hawk in the secondary. You need somebody who's going to make big plays. And there were spots where DJ did that over the past couple seasons. But with him gone, and there's not a whole lot there right now. And you saw, especially with some of the struggles that HaHa had, how big of a detriment not having a safety can be on that defense.
Think anybody's wondering about Derwin James? I think Deron Payne was great as rookie, but just he was there.
There are guys there every.
I think Tremaine Edmonds was very good too.
Yeah,
that's the guy that I had projected there, so I'm still annoyed by that.
I remember that. Well, and if you're going to stay in the 3-4, Tremaine Edmonds is tremendous for that.
The reason I always liked him is I thought he had great versatility, that he could play in or out.
Yep.
But
all right, Kyle, position of need of the most for the Skins without QB on the board.
I'm going to give two different – look at it. First of all, I think playmaker and offense is to me the major need. And, you know, we don't know what Darius Geis going to look like when he comes back. Is he going to be the same guy? But I think they need a playmaker on the outside. So I think that's one. And the hard part with safety is you almost have to put that, at least with receiver, you kind of have an idea. Well, if they re-sign Jameson, you know what their starting group will look like. It'd be Josh and Jameson. Paul Richardson. But at safety, who's going to be there next year? We don't know.
The cupboard is bare.
I mean, Apke. Monte Nicholson. I mean, you don't know.
Chase Reverett. I mean,
yeah. You really?
Yeah, we don't know. But I do think like in this day and age, and they've got to get somebody in offense that can make some plays. Especially because when you look at the quarterback position, what are they going to be able to do there? That you're going to have receivers who make these guys look better. I'm watching some of these young guys at quarterback and they're making their receivers look better. Baker Mayfield makes his receivers look better.
He made Brashad Perryman look good.
Yeah. Well, and it's just, it's where you can stick that ball and there's a narrow opening and an average receiver can create a very narrow opening and this guy's sticking it there. Well, that's not what they're going to have most likely. So, you need to get some more guys there who can make some plays, but so I'd probably lean toward that. If anything, I'll go safety 1B.
All right,
what do you say, JP?
I think
you want to say left guard. I'm in.
I know you are, Mitch. I think you gotta add. I am now in the camp where I think you add, and you these guys end up popping around every year. Like, go get a veteran receiver that you can count on for 750 yards. Like. As much as they should get a playmaker and really go all in on something, I think they need somebody they can count on.
You want to trade a first rounder for Antonio Brown, don't you?
I don't think it's nuts. I don't think they can afford it. They'd have to match the salary somehow. If they could afford it, I think Antonio Brown is a problem teammate. He's also 30 and he makes a boatload of cash. And I still think he's worth getting if you can make that happen. I don't see it happen. It goes against everything they've kind of done of late.
He's so expensive, too, that it would be...
And expensive for a while.
Yeah, and I think if you had I think it also depends who your quarterback is with him.
Sure. You don't think he'll sit quietly while Colt McCoy and a third-round rookie and Josh Johnson...
he'd like Colt. Colt throw the ball up to him. If Colt's healthy and they have a healthy season together, he's throwing a lot of those deep balls to him.
He would give him some shots.
He would give him shots.
Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman Chantilly Kia. Let's ride together.
Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram. Let's ride together.
This is the last one. I just saw this on Twitter and can't help not bring it up among the three of us.
Oh, boy.
Word is Hugh Jackson to the Vikings is becoming more of a real possibility. Mike Zimmer might try to hire him to run the offense and work with Kirk Cousins. I am seeing this from Ben Gosseling at Gosseling S. Trib. I assume he writes for Minnesota Star Tribune up there. Thoughts for the room. Hugh and Kirk, they're familiar with one another, right? No.
No.
But I guess similar system?
Well, so, yeah, because, I mean, yes, it would have been, you know, because Hugh obviously followed Jay there. And when Hugh was in Washington, Kirk was probably in high school. So, I think that at least they have some system familiarity. I think if I'm Kirk, I just make sure to stay clear of buses. they tend to get backed up over you with Jackson.
I mean, just think about what Baker has done in his opportunities to stick it to Hugh in two games. That's not an accident, dude.
And I would say this too. That was also as much about what Todd Haley and Freddie Kitchens, because Hugh wasn't even running that offense, which is kind of, you know, he had nothing to do with that offense, as he made it clear, which how much is that true? Or who knows? But, it was also Todd Haley, but Haley wasn't on anybody's side. And it just makes you wonder. But just, when you see that stuff, it's like there's other stuff going on there, I'm sure. But
between Kirk's meltdown and Reuben Foster getting cleared in Florida, how many victory laps are getting run around in certain corners over at Redskins Park?
Well, you know, you were in the locker room after the game, and you hear some workers coming in there saying, "Oh, Kirk came through again." And my first thought was, they came back and won.
That was wild,
oh,
dude.
And then I thought, oh, no, that's not what he was talking about.
And let's be clear, just, these were like dudes that work at the stadium.
Yeah, I don't even know who it was.
Right,
it
the maintenance guy. Yeah, but they were fired up, man.
Yeah, no, but it was just, that was like, you know, so yeah, I think I think that would be an interesting pairing in Minnesota. But, I think it'd be an interesting pairing.
It'd be an interesting pairing indeed.
Who do you think can diagram a wide receiver route on the sideline better, Hugh or Kirk?
Oh, man. The amount of, like,
exasperated looks.
That was an odd situation there at the end. You know what's fun is a lot of Monday mornings when we're in the locker room, in the Skins locker room, they got TVs everywhere. It's like they got TVs set up like a sports bar almost. They're like in lots of different corners and stuff. And usually NFL Network or ESPN's on. We're all kind of watching highlights.
See, JP, you just have a bunch of people saying, they got it too easy.
I know. Russell's screaming at me right now. But, we're sitting there watching ESPN highlights with players. And a lot of times, much like we don't get to see everything on Sundays, players certainly don't. So they're watching it the next day too. We didn't have that, obviously, because it was locker clean out and it was week 17. But imagine sitting in there, particularly in that one corner of the room where the defensive backs tend to sit and usually have lots of comments on what's going on the TV.
Yeah, they do.
Imagine watching that Kirk Thielen situation unfold on TV and some of those guys that usually speak up. Imagine the comments we would have heard. That would have been pretty funny.
That would have been a lot of fun.
Imagine if you could have overheard Deshaun and Pierre. Oh, watching boy. That go down.
Oh, man.
Those are the two that I would want to be a fly on the wall for.
Well, I would love to hear those two talk about just about anything, especially Deshaun when it comes to it. I guarantee that, although, listen, Deshaun had his own issues with quarterbacks eating their fingers and stuff.
I don't know this, but I would say that one of Deshaun Jackson's favorite quarterbacks to ever play with is Ryan Fitzpatrick. Dude will throw the ball deep at any point. You never know what he's going to do.
That's what I was saying about Kirk with AB. Colt with AB, I mean.
Yeah.
By the way, Deshaun will be available this offseason.
Oh, boy. Get your popcorn ready. Jay loves speed, man.
Yeah.
There you go.
Keim, thank you. This is now Keim's time. You can say anything you want if you want to say something.
I've got nothing to say.
No recipes? You got nothing going on the smoker weekend?
I don't think I haven't done anything since the pulled pork on the other day, which was freaking 12 hours.
Did you tweet a picture? That looked great.
I did, and it pulled apart unbelievably. It was unbelievably easy to pull it apart. It was fantastic, and it's done.
How about this?
Do you have the claws to pull apart, or are you full hands only?
No, hands with the gloves on.
Yeah, you like shred it that way.
Yeah, but they have the little claw things that you can like.
I have those claw things, but I'm not talented that way. I'm just like, I want to dig my hand into the meat.
We need to isolate that.
We'll leave that one alone.
all right, we probably won't talk to you before the title game. Keim, who you got? Clemson, Alabama.
Alabama.
All right.
They pay my kids' bills.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We'll roll tide then.
Roll tide.
John, thank you very much. Always want to thank the good folks, Oarsman Automotive of Virginia. We ride with them. You should do the same for Mitch and me and John. Thank you very much for listening. If you made it this far, I owe you a beer.
What Makes You Smile is brought to you by Dominion National. For anyone that needs dental and vision benefits, I have a one-stop shop for you. TeethKeeperSave.com. TeethKeeperSave.com offers dental and vision benefits for everyone with plans starting under $7 a month. Don't have benefits through your employer? Are you self-employed and need dental and vision benefits? TeethKeeperSave.com has various plans for individuals to choose from. Visit TeethKeeperSave.com today and enroll in minutes.
Oarsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Oarsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Oarsman story.
Oarsman Chantilly Toyota. Let's ride together.